This is Good Day Health. I'm Doug Steffen here in this round with Dr. Ken Kronhaus, who practices at Lake Cardiology down in Mount Dora, Florida. During the course of the hour, we will spend some time talking about my visit with Ken, what he found out, what there is, the reason that I expose myself, if you will, as a guinea pig. I like to talk about, from my perspective, what's going on in my body. So hopefully it will be a way for you to launch off into really good protective work on protective and detective work on your body. So that's part of the spirit of our conversation as we go through the hour. But one of the things that's really great about Ken is the amount of research that he does every week, looking at all these programs that are being described in the various reviews of internal medicine, the journals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So Ken, let's go right to this study on cell phone radiation. There is barely a month that goes by that we don't have something that comes to us about the vagaries of using a cell phone, one of the worst, if not one of the best inventions, but it really is bad for us, isn't it?
Well, it's not quite clear. It's not too bad, but this is an update of the longest, most thorough study and the latest on all of this. And this is a report out of the National Toxicology Program of two studies that have revealed that high exposure to radio frequency radiation results in tumors and tissue around the nerves in the hearts of male rats, but not of female rats or male or female mice. However, the levels and duration of exposure to radio frequency radiation were much greater than what people experience with even the highest level of cell phone use, Doug, and the study also exposed the rodents' whole bodies. And there are a few curious issues in these studies. In these studies, they exposed the animals to the frequencies of 2G and 3G signals. And now most people are already on 4G and soon to go to 5G. Mm-hmm. And also, interestingly and curiously, the rats that were exposed to radio frequency radiation lived longer than the control rats that were not exposed to the radiation. So my advice, some practical advice, keep the antenna away from your head, for example, by using the speakerphone mode or a hands-free device, and send text messages in preference to making voice calls as much as possible, except while you're driving.
See, that is the whole reason for the phone. I understand the science of this, so I don't want to necessarily debate that, and I don't even know that I should debate any of it. I think what we're missing in our, and this maybe gets studied in a different way as to how the disconnect that people have, the human interaction, and what that does for us psychologically,
And
because of the mind-spirit-body connection, what goes on in your mind affects your body. So, I mean, I could draw a rather widespread overview of this, and you know, but you're, as a scientist, just talking about the specifics of holding the cell phone away from you and using text because it's down in your lap when you do the texting.
Obviously, it's better to go face-to-face and have a good meeting if you want to develop a personal relationship. But this is a practical issue where we need to quickly connect, and it's a useful tool if used properly. And I think in this study, they exposed the animals to way much more radiation than any of us get. And I think if you use these in a practical manner, in a thoughtful manner, they'll be okay.
Well, they're much better now than they were. And there are devices that I remember when I got my first flip phone, there was something that I advertised even on the air that you could put on it that would supposedly negate the effect of a lot of the radiation that came out of these earlier cell phones. But I worked with somebody in Florida in the 1990s, the early 90s, he had one of those big clunky phones, and it was in his ear all the time. And he died at 73 of brain cancer, and I was sure it was because he had this thing in his ear all the time. It's got to mess your brains up. It has to. So, all right, so there's one item of interest. Let's go to we haven't got a lot of good news here today. Hot tea. Those of you who love hot tea, listen to what Ken has to say about what that does to you.
Report this week in the Annals of Internal Medicine, very good medical journal. Smokers and drinkers are already at higher risk of developing cancer. We know that. But those who regularly consume hot tea may be multiplying their risks significantly. Doug, hot tea is linked with a 2 to 5-fold rise in esophageal cancer, but only among individuals who also smoke or drink alcohol.
Okay. So if you don't smoke and you don't drink alcohol,
you don't have to worry about
hot tea is not going to bother your esophagus.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, so that was a concern. And I wonder what the impact is if you're drinking hot tea and you put some honey in it, other things that seem to modify the, not the value, but the way it tastes, its texture. I know, you know, when I have problems with my throat, I use straight honey, straight local honey, and it seems to make a big difference. So is that, can we take the hot tea element and make it even better with lemon and honey for certain things? That's what your grandmother told you to take if you were getting a cold, right?
Are you talking about, well, in general, it is a good thing to add, absolutely. But whether it will offset the effects on smokers or drinkers of alcohol, we don't know.
All right, but it's good. It's at least it's good to know that it isn't going to hurt you if you're not smoking and drinking. So one more reason not to smoke. And maybe not to drink. I don't, in any social situation we've been in, I've never seen you drink. You don't drink like, you're not like I am. You don't have anything to drink, do you?
I will occasionally have a glass of wine or a glass of beer.
Really? Oh, I didn't know.
I'm not against it, but unless I'm socially out, I won't do it. Usually when you go out with me, I'm usually have to work or something afterwards or something, but. Yeah. But when I'm really off, I've been known to have a glass of wine or a glass
really?
Of beer.
Okay, I have to remember that. I have to get you sometime when not that I want you to drink a glass of beer.
We have to share
a glass of wine.
In fact, my daughter.
I won't be drinking it. I don't drink that.
One of the most pleasant things I did over Thanksgiving was my daughter turned 21, and I shared with her first glass of wine together.
Well, there you go. That you know of. Anyway, next up,
we shared it together.
The first time we shared it together.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, got it. All right, for those of you who are trying to protect yourself against Alzheimer's, here's something that you may be interested in. It's time for us to go to what's that language, what's that course that we hear advertised all the time on the air for a language, studying languages. Listen to why that's important with Ken's explanation.
Bilingualism, knowing two languages, make changes in brain structure that are linked with resilience against Alzheimer's disease and mild cognitive impairment. This is the headline from a publication this week in a medical journal called Neuropsychologia. And what we need is more and more research has been pointing to bilingualism as a viable means for delaying or preventing Alzheimer's disease. So what we need to do is encourage people to learn a second language. And this seems to delay getting Alzheimer's disease, which all of us are concerned about. And here's a practical way to prevent it.
Yeah. Learn a new language. It's the same, though. It's putting your brain to work. It's like doing crossword puzzles. It's like doing
or
Sudoku
dancing.
Or dancing, keep your feet moving. That's good. The connection between your feet and your brain is something that has been studied and is very obvious and very direct. So there it is. Good news. Keep your brain active no matter what you're doing. Speak a language. Learn a language. Learn these other things. Don't let your brain get dull. That's really the bottom line.
Exercise
okay.
it.
Yeah, you're exercising your brain the same as you exercise your muscles.
And I think you're
endorphins.
Thinking
endorphins.
The Rosetta Stone is what I think
yes,
you were thinking.
That's what I wanted. Thank you. Rosetta, I was about to look that up on mine while you were looking it up on yours. Thank you. So here we have a focus on endorphins this week. So what is the effect of, and first, well, let's explain what endorphins are first.
And can I get the heavy voice from starting at number 7 when we're ready?
Oh, okay. All right, big voice announcer, Kara. For the top 7 reasons.
7 ways you can boost your endorphins. But first, let me answer that first question. What are they? Endorphins, Doug, are chemicals produced naturally by the nervous system to cope with pain or stress. They're often called feel-good chemicals because they can act as a pain reliever and happiness booster. and you just want to get these up. They're a natural way to treat anxiety and depression, and there are 7 ways I'm going to suggest naturally you can boost your endorphins. And endorphin means endogenous morphine, you know, a natural opiate that your body actually makes that's a healthy thing. I'm not suggesting anyone take an opiate, but these are natural chemicals that your body make that are very similar to very low-dose opiates. And so let's go. Can I start with number 7?
Number 7.
Regular exercise. These are 7 ways you can boost your endorphins.
Number 6.
Giving. This includes volunteering, donating, and helping others.
Number 5.
Yoga.
Number 4.
Meditation.
Number 3.
Spicy foods. It stimulates, causes a little difficulty in your mouth, so the endorphins make it all better.
Number 2.
Dark chocolate.
Number 1.
How can we forget laughing?
There it is. That makes everything work well. That really does, if you're laughing. Good belly laugh is really good and healthy for you. All right, so practical things here. There's sometimes some very scientific stuff that gets discussed and sometimes very practical things that seem to make a lot of sense. Here's something that is nothing but sense. It's Krill Omega 50, the product from Purity that has worked very hard. These people have a separate product. They have krill oil by itself and Omega 50 fish oil by itself, omega-3s. But this is a pill that's been put together to make a big difference because combining krill oil and omega-3s together have a really strong impact. And then why people say, why is coenzyme Q10, CoQ10 involved? Because this is very good for the heart as well. Ken will tell you that. Member of a key biochemical process that acts to catalyze the production of energy. It's all about energy in your cells, in your tissues, in your organs, in your body. So great energy comes combined with the perfect fish oil, in fact, and the right krill oil. So if you want to help your cardiovascular health, your system, so the Dr. Ken will tell you, like he told me this week, that everything is really good in your body, the plumbing is great, then you need to be on the Krill Omega 50 Plus. And the reason that I tell you about it in this light is because the folks at Purity want you to have a free bottle. So if I haven't gotten to every listener yet who has an interest in having strong cardiovascular health and really good joint comfort, that's what the krill does. Makes the sacs, the bursa, work better. It lubricates them. So krill oil together with fish oil, take it in the form of Purity's Krill Omega 50 Plus with CoQ10. Get a free bottle now at 800-355-1493. That's 800-355-1493. Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you. And these people know it, so they want to send you a free bottle so you can put it to the test. Do that now while you're thinking about it. 800-355-1493. You'll pay a small shipping and handling charge. That's it. Bottle itself is free. 800-355-1493. So the practice of medicine, especially preventive cardiological medicine, is done to the extreme at Ken's office in Florida, where I spent a day this week, and it's a day well spent. I'll tell you, by the time I got done that 8 hours there, going through all the tests and then having you review them with me, it is, as it always is, a great pleasure and a privilege to have you as a friend to learn from you about what I need to be doing and what everybody needs to be doing with his or her body. So if you would like to take advantage of that, people from all over the country, there were a lot of people in that office the other day when I was there, and I felt kind of badly because Ken only had some time with me, and he likes to take a lot of time with me, but his office was jammed up. What makes it interesting is I didn't get Ken to dinner until 8:30 on that night because he was still in the office with patients. So
I'm totally undressed on the show today.
Well, but that's a good thing. So
I'm
if you
joking.
Are looking for opinions about medical problems and you can't get a good fix on it and you haven't gotten the straight story from your doctor, you may want another opinion. Go to see Ken. Go down to his office in Florida, Lake Cardiology. I never remember the number. It's 352-1400, right? 735 area code.
352-735-1400. And we were so glad to see you, and the staff enjoys having you, and you ask us all, you challenge us all, and most excitingly, we were able, and I know that you give up your HIPAA to me each year. You don't mind me talking about you. I don't talk about other patients. But we were so pleased by what we're doing for you that we're keeping you absolutely stable, and that was very warm to me.
Yeah, well, nothing has really changed. I'm healthier. I really feel healthier now than I have for, and I haven't felt badly. I just feel good. And one of the, it's a visualization, Kara, you'll enjoy. So the two ladies, I'm in the room where the treadmill is, and Ken walks in, wants to know, where am I? I'm taking my shirt off. So then he starts looking at my physique to see how much, and he's trying to compare his physique to my physique. And the girls in the office looking at the two of us, thinking, who in the world?
I had all my
guys?
Clothing on, though.
Yes, you did.
Why is this a visualization I would love?
Yeah, because Doug was properly unclothed for a stress test.
Yeah.
You know, you wear shorts or your shirt's off. Your chest is exposed.
Right. Yes, it was.
And he came out into the hallway to show me his new physique.
No, I didn't. You were talking about your physique, and we were just sort of quickly comparing physiques. I think that's probably where it was.
But anyway. Somewhere around there.
Somewhere in that. So Lake Cardiology, right, check out Ken if you have questions. It's 352-735-1400. Let's go on to one other item from one of the journals this week, a focus on you as a cardiologist and your heart patients. And what happens to people who are heart patients who can no longer make love?
This is out of the Canadian Journal of Cardiology this week. That are you worried that the drugs you're taking to lower cholesterol or blood pressure might make you more apt to develop erectile dysfunction? Well, that's not likely, according to this new Canadian study. They looked at the statin, rosuvastatin, which is generic Crestor, and they looked at the blood pressure drug combination of candesartan and hydrochlorothiazide. That's sold, branded in America as Atacand HCT. And the drugs, these drugs did not cause erectile dysfunction, but unfortunately, they did not improve it. So in order to get to erectile dysfunction, you have to do it early to get the blood pressure under control, the cholesterol, the weight, the blood sugar, because most of erectile dysfunction is a circulatory issue. Sometimes it's a hormonal issue or a psychological issue, but very often it's circulation. So you got to get there early to keep yourself healthy, and that will prolong your ability to perform, men and women.
Yeah. All right, so just some of the things that we come up with here are based on practical knowledge that I think affect people of all ages. That's really what we're trying to do, is bring you information that will be important for everybody, no matter what your age. If you've got family, maybe something that Ken will say about what happens to people that are older. Well, if you have parents that are older, you can use that information. I would consider this to be in that that whole overview, Ken, a story about diet and how diet, the changing of one's diet, could slow the spread of breast cancer. I saw this week, and I was going to bring it to your attention. The deadliest, there are different types of breast cancer, are there not?
Absolutely, many different types.
Is it great? Like, my former wife had stage 4 breast cancer and lived with it for 21 years. Is that what we're talking about, the type, or is that the severity? What's that?
Well,
what does that indicate? If you have type 4 or whatever?
They're classified in both ways. There's a tissue type, is what you're talking about, the first part of it, what specific type it is, and then how advanced it is, what stage it's in. So those characterizations are used for all cancer.
So in this circumstance, the change in diet changes the outcome, and I don't know that this is new. This is something that we don't talk about much. We do. We talk about diet all the time, but how dramatic changes have been, at least in this circumstance, with a change of diet, how dramatic it is. And I wonder if that isn't the case with most cancers. If you change your diet, after all, you are what you eat. I had somebody on the Farm Hour this week who is growing a lot of these. What do they call it, Kara? The vegetables, macro, micro.
Yeah, microgreens.
Microgreens. Mm-hmm. And though I've read tons of theories about having these microgreens as a way to get rid of or to deal with the problems of cancers, because the diet it's so healthy and changes the chemistry of your body. It isn't really cancer chemistry.
Yes, and this was a publication that you're talking about in Nature, which is a very good medical journal, scientific journal, and they found that foods that were rich in this protein, asparagine, including dairy, whey, beef, poultry, eggs, fish, seafood, asparagus, potatoes, legumes, nuts and seeds, soy, and whole grains, actually helped slow down the spread.
But so breast cancer, could you think you could apply that to other forms of cancer?
Let's do a study.
Yeah, okay.
You have to test that. You can't. Intuition is unpredictable, except yours.
Except, I was going to say, my intuition is really pretty good.
It's amazingly more sensitive than the average bear.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to pause for a moment, and then I want to get into, because it's Heart Month, and you're a cardiologist, I think we ought to spend some time, a little more time than we usually do, talking about heart disease, heart failure, giving people things to think about, ways to lower the risk. It may be redundant, but I think it's worth repeating because heart disease is the number one killer of Americans. It's what keeps Ken in business in his office from 8 in the morning until 8:30 at night. And I think you'd all like to have Ken go home a little earlier. So if that's the case, maybe you got to listen to some of these things that he has from his experience. Who's most likely to suffer from heart attacks and heart failure, risk factors, that sort of thing. So we get to that. As I say, I think it would be a good couple of times during this month, as it is Heart Month, to spend some time talking with you more thoroughly. And again, you can use the results of my test the other day sort of as a guinea pig after we work our way through how to boost your immune system. This is the way to do it. This is the way to do it. Keeping yourself healthy so you don't get the flu, you don't get colds, and never mind just flus and colds. As we're just talking here about cancer, it's all about the chemistry in your body. And if you have a strong immune system, you're going to have a better chance of warding off the free radicals that are in your body. It's all the same function. Immune systems functioning well keep you from getting sick. I think there's, for most people, that is a common sense approach. And the folks at Balance of Nature provide that common sense by having combined nutrients from fruits and vegetables into these capsules that they have. This is a perfect idea. This is actually a stroke of genius. They've powdered about 9 different fruits and put them in the capsules. They've powdered 11 different vegetables and they put them in these capsules. So you get there's no sugar, there's nothing. It's just the essential, the bare essentials. Remember that old song? The bare essentials of life. Well, this is about the bare essentials of life. Fruits and vegetables. There's nothing in this except the raw fruit and vegetable that's been powdered. You open them up if you want to and put them on your food, or you just take them as capsules. A fruit and veggie capsule in the morning and a fruit and veggie capsule in the evening will improve the balance of your immune system. If you do it for a month, the studies show 700% increase in people who had weak immune systems when they get on this program from Balance of Nature. So check out all the testimonials that are really fascinating and fabulous at balanceofnature.com. It's a very important product for you to have in your life. Go to balanceofnature.com, use the code DJV, get the first month supply free, but you got to use that code DJV in order to get it. And all kinds of special discounts. They only have two products. They have the fruit and veggie product, and they have a fiber product. That's all. They're not all over the place. They're not like the usual supplement outfit that has hundreds of different things to choose from. Nope. All they are doing is producing dried fruits and vegetables that you take every day to enhance your immune system so you won't get sick no matter what the cause or potential cause. Get the story at balanceofnature.com. Use the code DJV. That's balanceofnature.com, code DJV. I noticed something before we get to the heart stuff from Bristol Myers, a story that got some promotion in all the newspapers this week. They have a breakthrough supposedly in the lung cancer research with some new product called Opdivo, O-P-D-I-V-O. It's an anti-tumor drug. And it's used with melanoma drug Yervoy. Man, you look at some of the stuff, the names these people come up with for these drugs. Anyway, there's a clinical trial going on now, and you buying into this, you think that it's all about immunology and immunotherapy. At least that's what I get out of reading this article. They've spent spent a lot of money trying to put this stuff right, and it's considered, because didn't Trump say in his State of the Union address last week something about getting rid of cancer, making our number one health priority? I thought I remember.
He talked about releasing more drugs.
Yeah, right.
Getting them out.
Okay. So what's your read on this?
Well, this is another step. This is hope where the current available chemotherapy has not been effective, and this is going to the new immune therapy that attacks specific genes that are specific to these types of cancers. And this is the new world, and we're going to be making a lot of breakthroughs, and this is just one along a long trail of you're going to hear more and more about immunotherapy really taking hold of cancer and hopefully getting rid of it.
Yeah, I've told you the story about my friend that has a real tough case of it's thyroid, I guess. No, it isn't thyroid, but it's your lymph system not functioning. And what is that? What kind of cancer is that? Is that like a Hodgkin's
lymphoma
disease?
Yeah, exactly.
Lymphoma?
But this is a whole new way of looking at treatment of cancer, not with chemotherapy, but actually using specific to the patient based on genes or antigens that are specific to their types of cancer, and getting the immunotherapy revved up to attack the cancer specifically and not the rest of the body. So this is very exciting.
All right. So that's exciting. It is Heart Health Month. I thought I'd give Ken 60 seconds or so in maybe a couple of minutes each hour between now and the end of February. We're together to make some definitive statements about lowering the risk for heart disease. You see people all day. I saw some of those people in your office the other day. I felt badly for them, actually. And I'm sure you do, because you're a lot closer to them. You wish you didn't have to see them. But what do they have in common, and what do you tell them about lowering the risk for heart disease, let's say, in their children?
Well, let me help give you 10 to 20 years of extra life right now in 30 seconds. It's my 5-4 rule, the 5 lifestyles and no 4 numbers. So and we'll have to expand on this another time, but it's the diet, it's the exercise, it's the mental stress reduction, it's limiting the alcohol and getting enough sleep, and then knowing your blood pressure, blood sugar, cholesterol, and getting your weight, those 4 numbers. And in time, we need to expand and talk in depth about each of those 5 items of the lifestyle.
One of the things that you've always been critical of me when it came to my cholesterol numbers. There are some who don't think that they make any difference at all. You don't agree.
Well, I think it depends on the person, and it depends on what you have. But if you have plaque in your circulation, the cholesterol definitely matters.
But I don't. Your CAT scan showed I don't have it.
In your coronaries, but you have it in the carotids.
Well, that's true. But it's not any worse now than it ever was.
Well, it is stable. That's correct. But there's always tomorrow.
So the flu season is upon us. Let's spend some time talking about that. The update continues. The number of deaths is up. Is this the largest number in 10 years, 20 years? I know that it seems that we have more focus on it. Is that the news media, or is there, in a practical sense, more of a problem this year with the flu and how many people are dying?
All of the above. This is the latest from the CDC that the flu season, Doug, in America is in its 10th week. But the CDC, they can't say if it's peaked yet. The flu season typically lasts 11 to 20 weeks. 16 kids died from the flu or flu-related problems in the past week, bringing the total of pediatric deaths, Doug, to 53 for the season. Hospitalizations, they're now even higher than ever. From October until the end of January, 15,000 people were admitted to hospitals because of the flu.
Wow.
And unfortunately, flu activity is still high and widespread across most of the nation and increasing overall. My suggestion, if you haven't had the flu vaccine, you can still get it. And also prescription antiviral medications, if you get to it within 2 days of the onset of symptoms, is not a bad idea. Talk to your doctor for each one individually.
Okay, So most of you will know, and we'll deal with this off and on here, I had my annual checkup with Ken this week, and one of the things we were talking about in his office in our hours of conversation was the flu shot. I had talked to some of his staff members earlier in the day who were doing the exams, and I said, what's the story with the flu here? And one of the ladies said, well, Dr. Ken makes us take a flu shot.
We offer it.
Well, but they all do. Because they take your advice.
But
how's that?
That's I line up first, but they're not required. But I do recommend it.
So how do you give yourself a shot? How do you, just take
one of my nurses, arm out? One of my assistants gives it to me. I don't do it myself.
Really? Do you give your arm?
I give them out to some, but my assistant does it for me.
Wow. Where do you put the shot?
Right in the deltoid muscle where you're supposed to.
Okay.
The shoulder muscle.
Yeah, not in the butt.
Not for this one.
Does anybody have vaccines anymore in the butt? You get shots in the butt anymore?
Yeah, you remember the old penicillin shots in the
yes,
butt.
Yes, I do. I remember
that's
bending
what you're
over.
Of that. Yes, yes, yes. When we
and
were
this
kids.
Doctor says, this is going to hurt me more than going to hurt you. I got news for you, pal. You're full of baloney. I'll never forget that. It must have been like 4 years old or something.
And our butts were black and blue.
Oh, they sure were. All right. So, and talking about the flu, I've been flying a lot, and I noticed that the airplanes are not any cleaner than they ought to be because they're, they just come down, they land, and they fill them up again and take off again. So this is really bad, though, what you've found in this report.
This is. You don't have to be a germaphobe to be concerned about this. Various surfaces in the cabin of commercial planes have many times the amount of bacteria, Doug, than an average kitchen counter, but the highest amount. The latest study found that the surfaces in airport terminals can have even higher germ counts than those in the planes. The highest germ counts in the terminals were found on the screens of airport kiosks, followed by bench armrests and then drinking fountain buttons. And the highest germ counts in the planes were on the flush button on the toilets, followed by the tray tables and then the seat buckles.
I'm going to wear gloves when I go to the bathroom in the plane next time. All right, Ken, thank you for your service. Dr. Ken Kronhaus here on Good Day Health.